The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Hello, this is Katrina Kirkaby, and I'm here with Tina Spindler, and we are UCCE Master Gardeners, and we're your host today on In the Garden with Master Gardeners. Today we're going to be talking about what's going on in our garden in August.
Hey, welcome, Katrina. It's a hot month in August, as we all know. Probably the hottest month of the year, even though I know September can be pretty hot also. August seems to have kind of the most continuous hot weather.
And we have longer days in August than we do in September.
That's right. Good point. We have more sunny hours in September, so we have cumulatively more hours of heat. So that's what we're going to be talking about mostly today. I don't know about you, but I don't plant a whole lot in August. Do you?
Oh, no. I don't plant a whole lot. And what I do is I go out early in the morning and late in the afternoon or early evening because it's just a little too hot for me.
Yeah, August is a tough month to be out in the garden a lot. But there are lots of things that we should be doing. And so we'll try and squeeze those in between our vacations, because I think a lot of us are going to be doing a few fun things in August, too. Not that the garden isn't fun in August, but, you know, we have our family vacations and such that we take in August as well. So I think first what we should talk about, of course, especially this year in this terrible drought, is water. And water, of course, is on everybody's minds. We've probably all just received our first water bills from a lot of water districts started new rate structures July 1st. So if we haven't received our water bills with these new rate structures, we might be soon.
And we might be surprised at what's in there.
Yeah. So let's talk, and I know we've talked about this before, but we just can't talk about it probably too much this year, particularly because we've got all of these things happening on the waterfront with rationing and higher water prices and so on. So let's talk about water first. So in any year, August is a month where you need to really pay attention to your irrigation. And this is a month you especially want to check your irrigation system. That's the first thing we can all do. And I know I am so guilty of wanting my whole life to not pay attention. You know, the automatic sprinklers were just there and they just did their thing. But now that we have to be really careful about how much water we use, all of us, I think, are going to need to learn a little bit about our irrigation systems. I know you are the Miss Water Thrifty person of the universe. I know you look every day at yours to see, you know, whether it's been cloudy and you need to water that day, or in the winter if it's raining, if you can turn yours off. So,
oh, in the wintertime I look at the 10-day forecast.
Yeah.
And that I can adjust things in the wintertime. In the summertime it's just harder. And what I look for more in the summertime is, do I have any leaks anywhere?
Absolutely.
And I check my sprinkler system. I check my valves, because just a little leak could really, especially now with the higher rates, can cost a lot of money. And it doesn't take that much. Turn your sprinklers on for a couple minutes and just walk around and look at your valves, look at your sprinklers, and just be heads up. It really, right now, it could really save you some money.
Yeah, and because our sprinklers usually come on early in the morning, which is when we want them to come on, we do want them coming on at, you know, 4 or 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, because we want them to be watering when the wind isn't blowing, when the sun isn't out, because we save on evaporation by doing it early in the morning. And also, our plants then have a chance to dry off during the day so that they don't have that wet environment for fungal diseases to proliferate. So it's good that we all water early in the morning, but it means we're all sleeping when it happens. So if you can this month, it's a great idea to go out and use that little manual button on your sprinkler timer and just turn it on manually. And as Katrina said, just walk around and take a look and see if any of your sprinklers are broken or pointing the wrong way, you know, pointing toward the driveway instead of towards the plants.
You don't need to water your driveway. You don't need to water other things. And, you know, and Tina, even if you don't know sprinklers, if you could have your gardener show you how to turn it on, and you could get those little flags at the store, like your big box store, and if you don't know how to fix it, just flag it for your gardener.
I do that absolutely once a month. I used to only do it twice a year. I have to admit, I used to only do it twice a year when water wasn't in such short supply. And I would do it when we changed the time, you know, because the seasons changed then. And so I would, in the spring, you know, go out and check all the sprinklers, knowing that I was going to be needing to up the watering. And in the fall, I would check them knowing that I could turn down the water. But now I'm doing it every month because water is so precious, and B, it is something that I think really can help save me money by identifying problems, you know, early on. So I do exactly that. I turn it on manually. I run around with those cute little red flags and put them in, and then when my gardener comes, he knows he has to turn on and check that sprinkler head. Or I've recently had two valves go out, and I see these big puddles, you know, in the yard. I'm like, oh, geez.
And my valves have gone out, too, and my valves are kind of hidden. You know, I put them behind plants, and if I don't go look, I don't know they're leaking.
Oh.
And so that's something I just have to make it, you know, when we redid our yard, we hid our valves. And that's wonderful when you hide your valves, but when you have a leak, you don't know about it. So
exactly.
We have to go out and kind of check our valves.
That's a great point, because I almost lost my citrus because I had a broken valve up on the slope where my citrus is, and I don't go up on the slope. And so shame on me, the valve was broken for a while, and the citrus weren't getting water for a couple of weeks. So it is a good idea to go walk around and just take a look at things. And also, the other thing you can do while you're doing that, looking at your sprinkler heads, making sure they're pointed the right way, making sure your valve isn't leaking, is take a soil probe with you. And if our listeners don't know what a soil probe is, it's like a big hollow stick. And it has an opening on one side. Picture a cylinder, a metal cylinder, that's open on part of one side. And what you do is you push that into the ground. They're about 18 inches long.
I think so.
Yeah, and you push it in the ground. And what it does when you bring it up is it has a core of soil in it. And that core of soil will look either damp or dry. And so if your core of soil is looking dry wherever you have put it, then you'll know that there's a problem with the irrigation system in that area, that those plants, that ground, is not getting the appropriate amount of water. It's especially important to do where you have trees, because this summer, with our water restrictions, I know my water district, IRWD, Irvine Ranch Water District, is recommending that you cut your outdoor use of water by 50%. That's huge. And so to me, what that means is you're going to lose something. And everyone is saying, you know, brown is the new green for lawns. And so the lawn should perhaps be the first thing that you allow to go. And what I am going to do is, and what I have been doing, is I'm preserving my trees. That's where I'm devoting the water. And the thing with trees, though, is that you can't just water them like you water a lawn. So you don't want... Say you're in your neighborhood, you're allowed to water on Tuesdays and Saturdays. And so you turn on your sprinklers for, you know, 10 minutes on Tuesdays and Saturdays. That's probably not going to do the trick for your trees, because trees need to be watered deeply. And they don't need to be watered twice a week. They need to be watered once or twice a month, but they need to be watered really deeply, 2 to 3 feet deep.
Now, you also have, it also depends on what type of trees you have. You were telling me about the trees in your yard. If they're native trees, you don't
absolutely
need to do that.
Absolutely. So I have native oaks and native sycamores, and I am not watering them this summer. They get a little bit of water, the oaks do, on the slope, because there are some other native plants up there that are better off if they're watered once a month. So the oaks, being in the same location, are getting watered once a month. But, you know, the oaks, because they're native, are generally adapted to not have water in the summer, because in California, we don't get much water in the summer.
Now, speaking of those, you've had those oak trees for a while, and they are established.
They are. They've been there for 10 years, and that's a really important point for everyone to note. We've been advising folks on this show and at throughout our Master Gardener venues and talks that the summertime is not the time to transition your yard to native plants, because native plants, when they're young, still need water. So we've been advising people to wait until fall, when the weather cools off, and hopefully when we maybe start to get rain in the late fall in November or December. So do not think that you don't need to water your trees if they are young. If they are young, even if they're native trees, they will need some water. And that's why we're advising folks to wait to tear out their high water use plants until the fall. And even then, when you plant those native plants, they need to be watered. If we have another dry winter, you're going to have to water those native plants for a couple of years, probably 2 to 3 years, before they are able to adapt to just natural rainfall.
And this could be a good time to apply for your local cities to get rebates on new sprinklers, about taking out your lawn. And you could start working on that at this point in time. And then when the fall comes along, because who knows how long each city is going to have money for rebates. But if you apply for it now, get it going, let your lawn die naturally. By the time fall comes, you're more ready to start off in that process.
Absolutely. So one of the things you can do in August is to plan your new landscape, to plan your water thrifty landscape that you want to transition to. And that means if you want to hire a landscape designer or landscape architect, you know, to completely come in and design that for you, this would be a good time to do that. Also, as Katrina said, to contact your water district and find out what sorts of rebates they have, either on equipment like new sprinkler heads or smart controllers, or some of them are giving out funds for replacing your lawn. So now in August would be a great time to do all of that planning and research, and then when October comes, you'll be ready to hit the ground running. But let's talk just for another couple minutes about how we should be watering in August to preserve the plants that we've got that we want to preserve. So if we're letting our lawns grow dry, that's going to save us a ton of water, and we can then use that water in the other areas of our yard where we want to keep things. And as I said, I think one of the main places to keep your investment would be in your trees, because your trees have been there for a long time and they're very expensive to remove if they die. Even just removing them is expensive, much less buying a new tree to replace it. So let's try to save our trees. And there's a couple of ways to do watering for trees. As I said, they don't need to be watered, you know, twice a week like some of your other plants do. They are probably preferring a less frequent, once or twice a month, depending on the kind of tree it is, but they do want to be deep watered. So how do we deep water? Well, there's a couple of ways to do it. One of the ways I like to do it is because my automatic sprinklers, if I just try and run those, they put out so much water over such a short period of time that it's hard for that water to get down into the ground. It just runs off, right? Water for 5 minutes and the rest of it is just going to run off. So what I actually like to do is I take my hose and I take, remember the old-fashioned sprinkler nozzles that we would run through when we were kids?
Oh yeah, that sprayed into the yard.
Yeah. So I just take one of those, you know, the nozzle probably cost me $3, and I just put that on the end of my hose and I put it under the tree and I turn it on and I adjust the spray so that the spray is only as wide as the drip line of the tree. And for our listeners who don't know what a drip line is, it's where the canopy of the tree stops. So if the canopy of the tree is, say, 8 feet wide, then that's your drip line where that canopy is. And then I let the spray go another foot or 18 inches beyond the drip line, because that's where the tree's new roots are. The tree's feeder roots, the most active roots, are a foot 18 inches or more beyond the drip line. So it's not important to water next to the trunk. It's most important to water where that drip line and a little bit beyond. So I just turn the sprinkler on so that it's watering, you know, that whole area around the drip line and a little beyond of that tree. And then I watch it. I'll let it run for 10 minutes, and if I see puddling start to happen, I turn it off.
And that's when you can use your water gauge or
your soil probe.
Your soil probe to see how deep it's gotten.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't do the soil probe right then, because, you know, the water is going to travel and soak into the ground.
Takes a while to get through.
Takes a while. So I would actually use the soil probe the next day is when I, well, and I like to do it. But generally what I do is I'll let it run for 10 minutes, and then I'll turn it off and move it to another tree and let it run for 10 minutes and so on. And then I'll take it back to the first tree and maybe let it run another 10 minutes and go through that process again. And this, it may sound like, oh my gosh, I don't have the time to do that. Well, here's the thing. You can do it on the day when you're doing laundry. And when you change the load from the washer to the dryer, you remember, oh yeah, time to move that little sprinkler over to the next tree. And so you can figure out ways, or I'll do it while I'm working in the garden. I'm going to be out there for half a day working in the garden anyway. And so I just do that deep watering then.
I have a hint for that.
Oh, good.
Put a timer on. Because I have forgotten
to change
the tree. And I either now I set it on my house or my cell phone, or I put it on the stove if I'm working in the house, so there's a timer there. But you just don't want to forget about it. And then just could be hours later.
Absolutely, because I've done the same thing. And when we're trying to save water and we don't want crazy, ridiculous water bills, a timer is absolutely...
And I have my phone on in my pocket a lot of times, so every time I change the tree for watering, I just set another timer. And then I'm like, so many times I just would have forgotten about it, and it would have too much water for too long.
Absolutely. Another way to deliver the water to those trees is to buy inexpensive soaker hoses that you can get at any big box retailer, and you can put those around your tree and leave it kind of semi-permanently if you want. I think they're like $6 per soaker hose or so. And you can get them long enough so that you can make actually a double circle around your tree. So say one circle around the drip line, and then you keep wrapping it around another 18 inches beyond the first drip line, and then you have two sort of concentric circles of soaker hose around your tree. And then what you do is you just run your hose up to the soaker hose. It has a little connection that will just fit right on your garden hose, and you can turn that on, and that delivers water at a much slower pace.
But
still set your timer. Yeah. But for that, you know, you could leave that on for, you know, a couple of hours and not be having runoff worries at all, because the soaker hoses, you know, don't deliver enough water for it to run off. You can be sure that it's going to go right into the ground. And then, as Katrina said, use that soil probe, and I like to use it the next day so that I can really see where that water went. And hopefully when you do that 18 inches down in that root zone, you'll find that the soil is moist all the way down, and then you're good. You're good for another month, or if it's a tree that's a heavy water user, maybe you need to do it, you know, twice a month. But for most trees, once a month, it will do the trick. So that takes care of our trees, which is absolutely the most important thing. And then the other thing that we can do, give you a couple of other strategies. We hope you've already mulched. I know Katrina and I mulched at the beginning of summer. How many yards did you bring to your yard?
Oh, I think I only did 20 this year.
Only 20 yards of mulch? That's a lot of mulch.
I have a big yard. I was worried about my water bill, and I know that mulch will save my water bill.
Absolutely. So if you didn't mulch, you can still mulch. You can mulch any time of year,
anytime.
And it always helps. And if you did mulch earlier in the year and you're noticing some bare spots, doesn't hurt to get a few new bags, you know, from the local big box retailer. Or, you know, if you have a gardener who will, you know, deliver some and spread it for you, that's another way to go too.
I have another one for you.
Okay.
My gardener likes to water. Okay, I've cut back my water and I'm doing my cycling twice. And I came home the other day and my sprinklers were going off. And they were going off and my sprinklers were having a party. My whole yard was having a party. Well, my gardener decided I hadn't been watering enough and my yard needed to be greener. So he reset all my sprinklers to my property. He was helping me out. So we had to have a little conversation about, I want to keep my yard alive, but it just can't be too alive right now. So even if you have your sprinklers cut back, you might need to have a conversation for your very caring gardener that...
That's a good point, yeah.
He just turned everything up and he said, oh, Miss Katrina, you know, he says, your yard is thirsty, Las Agua. And he adjusted the entire property, and I had to go back and readjust the entire property, saying I want to keep them alive, but I can't have...
You know, that's a great point, because your gardener is going to see that some of your plants aren't very happy, and maybe you're letting your lawn go dead. But if you haven't communicated that to your gardener, they may be trying to... quote, fix things for you.
Well, that's
a great point I hadn't even thought of. You do need to talk to your gardeners if you have them.
Well, I even talked to my gardener, and he told me I didn't understand. So he was just going to help me out.
Yes.
Because I didn't understand that plants need more moss water. So if you notice that, you need to talk to your gardener, and then you need to pay attention and talk to him again if he changes your water system.
Good point.
He doesn't get it because my gardener loves green and he loves water and he just puts it on there. And I came home and you know, my yard was really, really happy, but I don't know what it did to my water bill.
Yeah, there you go.
And if I didn't notice it, I don't know what it would have done for a whole month of it.
Right. But, you know, if your gardener is conscientious and you want to enlist them to help you, here's a couple other things that you can have them help you with. I know I did this actually a couple years ago. If you have trees on slopes, and I have 8 citrus trees on a slope, and they were not doing particularly well, and I realized they weren't, even though they were on bubblers, so we thought that they were getting water, you know, slowly and deeply, but because they were on a bit of a slope, a lot of the water, unbeknownst to me, was running off, not where I could see it when it was sprinkling, but just gravity underneath the ground was making that water not stay in the root zone. So one of the things I had my gardener do for us is I had him build little watering basins around each of those trees. And that way, the water that is being used to irrigate gets trapped for a longer period of time by the watering basin. Now, the way we created them is not with soil. You know, whenever we plant a new tree, we always build a soil watering basin around it. But on a slope, of course, over time, that soil is just going to move. So what we ended up going to was those interlocking cement, you know, blocks. And we only did, you know, 2 blocks high, and we only did it around the front of the tree because, you know, the back of the tree was then level. The soil at the back of the tree was then level with that. But that's something to think about. If you have trees on a slope and you're wanting to make sure that water is being aimed toward the root zone, consider building watering basins out of stones, out of those retaining blocks, you know, whatever. In fact, I was reading in a gardening book that in the olden days, people would even use abalone shells, you know, because you could smush them kind of into the soil with the sharp edge. Isn't that would be pretty. I don't have any abalone shells, but I thought that was kind of
cool. That's a whole nother subject about our loss of abalone.
But. Yeah. But anyway, you know, you want to keep that water where you want it. So building some kind of watering basin will help.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. I just assumed it. I didn't use what you have, but I have wood.
there you go.
What and I have it do? On not quite three sides.
Yeah.
But it just would run off.
Without
the wood.
Yeah.
And, you know, mine's about 18 inches high, and it's just in the side of the hill, and it captures that water.
Yeah. So that's a really important thing, is to figure out how to capture the water and keep it where you want it. So watering basins. Another thing that you could ask for your gardener's assistance in is double potting. Do you do any double potting in your yard for your potted plants?
I don't have really very many potted plants in my yard.
So I started doing this last year, actually, kind of by accident. My garden was being used to film something, and so the film crew, you know, brought a bunch of these beautiful, you know, pre-planted, you know, flowering containers, right? Lots of color that they wanted for this little film. And so lucky me, I had all this stuff left when they, you know, left. But the pots they were in were just the plastic ones, right? Mm-hmm. But I didn't want it to go to the trouble and expense of, you know, repotting them and buying new potting soil. And they looked so fabulous, I didn't want to transplant shock them, you know. So what I did is I just found my own pots, the ones decorative, you know, like the Mexican clay pots that I had that weren't being used, and I dropped these plastic pots inside them. Oh my gosh, they just thrived. And I figured out, and then I've since read in books, Pat Welsh's advises this in her Southern California garden book, so it's not like I discovered anything new, but by doing that, what happens is it insulates,
cools it down,
your plants, and so you have the plastic pot that the plants are planted in, you know, staying more moist because the clay pot that you set the plastic pot in acts as a barrier to the heat, and you can even do it further. I've read, you know, some people will even, you know, stuff another insulating material in between the two pots.
That is a great idea.
But I'll tell you what, I used to struggle with keeping, you know, because I love color, and I would struggle over the summer always keeping them watered because, you know, you're always traveling and you just get busy, and so they would just not stay very happy. But when I did that, all of a sudden I had these much more happy and well evenly watered plants because they weren't having that cycle of, oh, now I'm dry, oh, now I'm wet, oh, now I'm dry, you know.
Or I'm gone for 5 days and, oh, I don't have any water and now my plant's dead.
Right. Or it's the, you know, oh, the soil temperature is 90 degrees, oh, now it's, you know, 65 degrees. By having that insulation, the soil temperature as well stays at a more even keel. It doesn't have those extreme highs and lows. So double potting is another way to save water.
Great idea.
Yeah. And then, of course, we've talked in the past about cycling your sprinklers. So I assume our listeners are already doing that. And that just means taking your irrigation time and splitting it up. So if you're going to irrigate for 8 minutes, you split it at least into two cycles of 4 minutes each. And then let the rest of your stations run also with their irrigation time split at least in half, maybe even three times, so that the water has a chance to soak in, and then you have another cycle of that irrigation.
And then it could absorb more water the second time.
Exactly.
Tina, I think we just need to take a moment and say a couple things. If anybody's interested in what we're talking about and wants more information, they could go to our website, which is www.ucanr.org. Excuse me. I just gave you part of our Master Food Preserver's website. Let me give you ours. www.uccmg.com. If you have any questions and you'd like some information, you could always email us at our hotline number, and that is hotline@uccmg.com. I also need to let you know that the opinions expressed on the show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Tina, what should we talk about now?
Well, you know, I'm kind of glad that you made that little mistake about announcing the website for the Master Food Preservers. Because you know what else we should be talking about is August is a big harvest month, right?
Oh my goodness, it sure is.
If you've planted vegetables, you've got tons of stuff that you need to harvest, and often it comes in faster than you can eat it, and faster even than your neighbors will take it away from you. So let's talk a little bit about what Master Food Preservers are and mention their website again, because with all of this abundance, we need to know how to maybe preserve it for later use.
That sounds wonderful.
Now, Katrina is a Master Food Preserver. I am not. I've not yet taken the time to go through the training, although I grew up doing some food preserving, so I do can a little bit, but I'm not a Master Food Preserver. So, Katrina, tell us a little bit about what Master Food Preservers do.
Well, just a little plug here, because this is something else that's near and dear to my heart. There is also Master Food Preservers, UCCE, Master Food Preservers of Orange County. And if you'd like some more information on how to preserve some of your summer harvest, we do fermenting, we do canning, we do pickling. Oh, it's just
jam making.
Jam making. It's just fun. And you could have it all year long. You could have it in the wintertime. You know all those tomatoes you're getting right now and you don't know what to do with? Can them. And all the zucchini. Make sauce and can it. Or all the zucchini. I mean, my neighbors are rolling up their car windows when they see me coming and they're not answering their door with all the zucchini. Well, I'm making zucchini chips. And I'm throwing them in lunch, you know, just dehydrating them. It's just so simple to do. And the UCC Master Gardeners have classes for the public. So if you'd like to find out more about that, the website, which I started giving earlier, is www.ucanr.org/MFPOC. And our hotline, if you have questions on that, is like, what do I do? This is how far I've gotten, and I don't know what to do. Or how do I can something, or where's the next class, you can go to UCCEMFP, as in Master Food Preserver, at ucdavis.edu. And it's a group of people like the Master Gardeners that really like to help out. They really like to spread the word, and they love teaching. So both of those are great access places to find out what to do with your summer harvest.
Absolutely. And this is the time of year when we're going to be, hopefully, having some great harvests. And that, back to talking about what to do in the garden this month, is one of the things that we should continue to do, is to pay attention to our veggie garden. Of course, we can't skimp on water in the veggie garden. If you're going to grow food, you do have to irrigate that appropriately. So if you are allocating your water to the most important things first, your veggie garden, where you're growing your food that you eat, would be one of the first places that you want to allocate that water. And then you want to be paying attention to how those fruits are producing, because if you don't harvest your tomatoes or you don't harvest your zucchini, well, first of all, you'll get a zucchini baseball bat if you don't harvest it. But if you don't harvest the green beans, etc., they will quit producing. Whereas if you harvest them appropriately when they're at the appropriate size, that encourages them to continue to produce food. If you let them get too big where the seeds are at that mature stage, then the plant thinks it's done, because the plant's main goal in life is to produce seeds for the next generation. So be sure that you continue to harvest, and that way you'll extend your harvest, you know, into September and, depending on the plant, maybe even October or November. So that's one of the main things we want to do, is harvest. And then, of course, if you have too much, then you'll need to check out one of those Master Food Preserver classes so you can figure out how to can it.
And there's so much fun, and there's topics on different things, and it's really easy to do, and it's really not that hard, and it's fun to give as gifts, and it's fun to store for the wintertime.
Absolutely, yeah. At Christmas time, for many, many years, I've given homemade jam, and it's, everyone looks, you know, my boss back in the day, you know, who was one of these people who had kind of everything, his favorite thing to get at Christmas time was my homemade jam, because he didn't get that anywhere else. So they can be wonderful gifts.
Great gifts and great for ourselves. And,
oh, yeah.
Just love it. And another thing for our garden right now is I had our water company out just if they had any suggestions for my yard. And one thing he was really impressed with in my vegetable gardens is my straw.
Yes.
And I know I talk about my straw all the time, but even the water company was impressed because it keeps the coolness in, it keeps the water in, it keeps the weeds out, and it's easy to do, and it keeps your garden cooler, and it's easy to push aside if you're trying to plant something else. It's not difficult to push aside. And I think August is a great month. Every month is a great month to have it, but especially August.
You're right, Katrina. I just have not gotten to the feed supply store to get straw this year. But I'll tell you what, that is something I have to do for August because August is just so brutally hot. I know that my veggie garden will be a lot happier if I run over and get straw and mulch it ASAP.
And, you know, a lot of plants stop producing when it gets too hot.
They do.
And if you want to keep your plants producing, if you just cool those roots down, they don't think it's time to stop.
Absolutely.
And you cool the roots down and your harvest will be longer.
Absolutely.
And if you're not using straw, put some mulch or something else down there.
Yeah, but the straw makes a great mulch for the veggie garden. And I think because of its light color, it reflects some of the heat away from the soil as well, so that it keeps that soil temperature cool for a couple reasons. One, it's insulating it because it's on top of the soil, and B, that light color reflects some of the heat away from the soil. So, yeah, I can't say enough about what a great thing to do for your veggie garden.
It really made me feel good when the water company said it was a great idea.
I'm like,
I'm so proud of myself.
Good job, me.
Yeah.
Well, let's just talk a little bit more about our edibles, and this is about the deciduous fruit trees. A couple things I want to mention. Do you ever get those water spouts on your deciduous fruit trees in the summer?
Yes. Tell us about water spouts, Tina.
So a water spout is, you'll see this really vigorous, almost vertically climbing new shoot on the branch of your fruit tree. And that's called a water spout. And it's not going along in the manner of your rest of your branches. It's growing straight up vertically. And you want to prune those out. If you don't prune them out, they almost act like mini trees. And if you leave them there, they'll start to branch out and do kind of their own thing, which will interfere with how you've pruned your tree so that it has a nice open structure and so on. So do prune out those water spouts when you see them.
Do you know when I first moved here and I first got a fruit tree, I was so excited about that water spout because it grew vigorously.
So you thought you were just an awesome gardener.
I thought I was an awesome gardener, but I didn't realize, and especially right now, it's taking water from the tree.
Absolutely.
It's taking nutrients from the tree, which we need to conserve for which part of the tree we really want.
Exactly.
So get those out quickly. Don't do what I did when I first moved here.
Yeah. And then the other thing, too, is notice if they send up suckers, which come from down below. And the suckers will come sometimes directly from the roots, you know, near the trunk of the tree. And sometimes they'll come from, most fruit trees are grafted, and you can see that little ring on the bark towards the bottom of the tree. And the part of the plant that's below that ring is the rootstock, and the part of the plant that is above that ring is the fruit producing. And sometimes that root stock, it's been chosen because it's really vigorous and resistant to disease. And so sometimes it decides it wants to start sending up its own, you know, branches in the form of suckers. And you don't want that to happen because, as Katrina said, it will suck all of the nutrients and water and energy away from the part of the plant that you do want to produce fruit.
And that rootstock is something you really don't want to be growing anyways, because it does give a vigorous part of the tree, it makes the tree grow, but when they graft it, they put something that's wonderful on top of it, and that rootstock by itself sometimes just has really nasty fruit, and
it does.
It's just not worth it.
If you ever accidentally leave one of those suckers to grow, the fruit that you get is usually so awful. It's bitter. It's maybe really tiny. If it's a rose, it's usually this red rose that has these single petals that, you know, just are not very pretty flowers. So
cut that off.
Cut it off.
As soon as you cut it off. We save the water for the tree.
Yeah, save the water for the tree.
So anything down below that's below that notch you could see in the tree.
The graft line.
The graft line, just cut it off.
Yeah, absolutely. And we mentioned roses, so that's a nice segue into the next part of our discussion, which is the pretty part of our landscape. Not that our veggie gardens aren't pretty, but let's say the decorative part of our landscape. And that is our roses. And believe it or not, roses are not super, super water hungry. I'm devoting some of my spare water or scarce water to keeping my roses because I have a lot of roses. And roses actually, have you ever been at like a house maybe that was in foreclosure and so all the irrigation had been turned off, but the roses are still blooming?
Yes.
Yeah, so that just goes to show you that the roses will send their roots down fairly deep, and they can exist. Now, they may not look their best with out a little bit of water, but they're pretty hardy and somewhat drought tolerant. So anyway, I'm trying to preserve my roses, and so far they've been perfectly happy this summer with less water, you know?
Yeah.
But one of the things we can do in August, because, you know, gotta love living in Southern California, we can have roses in December blooming, right? Love sending pictures of those to the relatives back east.
Your house is last December. Those roses, December, January.
Yeah, they pretty much didn't quit last year because it never got cold. But one of the things we can do in August, because oftentimes we've had a little bit of fungal disease because we had some June gloom and some July, you know, junk, you know, moisture-wise with overcast days. So we might have had some powdery mildew or some rust on our roses, or we may have had some insect damage. And so sometimes our roses by August, the plants themselves are looking a little scraggly. So what I like to do in August is I give them a pruning, not as, you know, harsh as you do in January, but I cut back maybe up to a third of my bush roses, and not climbing roses, but, you know, the shrub roses, about, you know, cut them up down to about a third, or cut off about a third.
So you leave two-thirds
on there. I leave two-thirds of the plant, cut maybe up to a third. And one of the things that's great about that is I often have a fair number of blooms in August, so you get to bring all these bouquets, make these gorgeous bouquets in the house. And then I feed them a little bit, and boy, then by September and through October and November and often into December, I have gorgeous, full blooming roses. Because when that heat starts to subside a little bit, then they are just
happy.
happy, and they've had that little pruning that's taken away some of the insect and fungal disease damage, and they just go to town blooming and look spectacular. So August is a good month to give your roses a little attention.
And that is from a rose person. Tina knows her roses.
I love roses. They're so fun. So the next thing I want to talk about, I don't know how much time we have left, but the next thing I think we should talk about, because this is a little counterintuitive to some of our listeners, is starting seeds.
Oh, tell us about starting seeds, Tina. I'm excited.
So it's going to be crazy.
People
hot.
Are thinking it's August.
Yeah.
Starting seeds, what are you talking
this
about?
This woman has lost her mind. But believe it or not, in August, we have to start thinking about our cool season garden. And that's a good thing, because when we're super hot, we can go inside. Maybe we have the air conditioning on. And we can say, ah, yes, when the weather is cool, what am I going to have growing in the garden? And believe it or not, August is when you got to start those seeds for your cool season
garden. Probably late August?
Late August,
late August.
So if you grow things from seeds, and I love to grow things from seeds, and it's really not that hard, and I've convinced Katrina to do more from seeds. She's been doing more.
I've been doing more, and what I'm really excited about is the choices.
That's the thing.
There's so many choices, and you could have, it's just not the norm, and you get to choose, and the hardest part is, what am I going to grow? Because there's limited amount of space, and I have a big garden, and half the fun is just, what am I going to grow? You can get so many different things when you grow from seed.
It's just so nice. And, you know, the nurseries try to do a good job, but of course they have limited space for selling stuff. And so they can only have a few varieties of plants.
They have tried and true varieties.
Exactly.
And you can't go wrong with what you get at the nursery because it's here.
But if you want to branch out, if you want to have a little more variety, if you're tired of just being able to plant, you know, romaine, lettuce, and head lettuce, and you want to try some of the more unusual types of lettuce, if you don't want to plant just one variety of spinach, but you'd like to try some other varieties of spinach, if you want to plant, well, and of course, carrots, a root vegetable, you have to plant from seed. They don't do well being transplanted. But there are these veggies that have different colors, different shapes, different textures.
And different tastes.
Different tastes, and you can't get them usually in the nurseries, or they aren't, you know, you might spy them one year and think you're going to get them the next year and they won't be there. So I tried a variety of lettuce one year. I got a free packet of seeds. It was called Scottsdale, and it's a heat tolerant variety of lettuce, and I was so excited to get that, and, you know, was hoping I could find it in the nursery, because I like to get lettuce planted, you know, even in September, right? Because I love having that homegrown lettuce in the backyard. But if you're planting lettuces, you know, out in your garden in September, you probably need one that's a little bit heat tolerant, right? Because it's still pretty hot.
September, October, yeah. We can have some warm days.
Exactly. And so I loved this. And boy, do you think I could find that variety anywhere? Nope. Had to order more seeds, because that was, you know, one thing that I could only find in a seed packet, not in a nursery anywhere. So yes, so in the latter part of August to the very end of August to early September is when you're going to want to plant out your seeds in containers that you would start indoors, you know, where you can have even temperatures. Because if you start them in little six packs outside and we get those 90 degree days like we do in August, your little seeds could dry out pretty quickly. So I like to start them indoors, just like I do in January, right? Mm-hmm. Start them indoors. And I look in the seed catalogs or online and just look at all of the wonderful cool season veggie choices that are out there. In the winter, of course, it's any of the grains, the kales, the cabbages, the arugulas, the lettuces, and anything in the whole family, that cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, all of those kinds of plants are wonderful for the cool weather.
Now, when you're doing that, Tina, if you plant, I know sometimes people could plant things closer to a window and put them in little containers closer to a window, but sometimes the place you have in your house doesn't have a lot of light. So what do you do if there's not a lot of light?
Well, there's a couple things you can do. First of all, you can use a grow light, and you can purchase grow lights. Basically, it's a fluorescent light, and it's on a stand, and you put your plants, your seeds that you're growing, in their containers underneath this light, and that gives you a simulated daylight that will allow your plants to grow. I have found windows that we generally have windows somewhere in our house. And so what I have done, and one of my favorite places to use, one of my best windows, is in a bedroom. And there's a chest of drawers that's, you know, under this window. And I just put a plastic tablecloth on top of the chest of drawers so that there's no potential for me damaging the wood of the furniture. And that's my grow table. And, you know, it only takes the seeds, you know, I keep them in the house for It depends on the weather, but, you know, 4 weeks-ish. So the reason you're starting them in August and the end of August is, say you started them August 15th and they were a seed, say it was broccoli, and it says, you know, plant out 8 weeks later into the garden. Well, 8 weeks from the middle of August puts you into the middle of October, which is a good time to be planting out your broccoli and your cauliflower. If it's lettuce, probably, you know, shorter than that. You can probably plant it outside in, you know, 4 weeks. So maybe I would start that the very end of August and then plant it out, you know, the first part of October, the end of September. So you judge it based on the seed packet. It will tell you when.
And you also judge it if you live at the ocean versus inland.
Absolutely, what your temperatures are going to be like. I just love doing that. I love growing all the different kinds of lettuces, and you can also direct sow them, you know, outside once the weather isn't too terribly hot. But if you want to get a jump and have your crops, you know, ready to go into the ground when they're of a size where you can start harvesting them pretty quickly.
You know, you just mentioned you mentioned something, Tina, which I love doing is a rotation. Or I plant something and 2 weeks later I plant some more and then I plant some more. So I have it continuously throughout the season. So being able to plant inside gets you a heads up.
It does.
And then when you're able to plant outside, those are going to become productive after what you planted inside.
Well, because if you think about it, you know, we don't want to rip our tomato plants out until they're totally done, right?
Right.
Or our peppers.
Yeah.
And so our tomatoes and peppers, you know, often go way late, you know, through November, maybe even into December. And so if you're waiting until those are completely done to sow your seeds outside, well, you know, you're not going to have lettuce crops until, you know, 4 weeks later. So I like to start them inside, and usually, especially with a small crop like lettuce, you know, a single lettuce plant doesn't take up that much space. You can usually squeeze those in, you know, in front of the tomatoes or next to the peppers, or, you know, maybe the bush beans that you planted are done, so you've got a little square where you can, you know, squeeze some lettuce in. But if you've already got that spinach or that cabbage or that kale started inside, then you just drop it in when you pull something out, and you'll be able to harvest within a couple of weeks, because if you're harvesting the outer leaves of the plant, which is what we usually start with when we're growing lettuce, you know, you can harvest within a couple of weeks of planting your little plants. So it gives you a jump on the season.
Also, Tina, tell us about one thing we need to be careful of if we're planting inside is having something underneath our plants, so the water doesn't run over that beautiful table of yours, or
right,
runs on the floor.
So the steps to planting seeds when you're doing them indoors is, first you want to have really clean containers, and you can buy seed starting tray kits at a garden shop or a big box retailer, and they usually come with three pieces. So they come with a tray, a bottom tray, and then inside the tray are the cell packs that you would put the soil. And then the third piece of it is usually a clear plastic lid. And the reason that that is a nice thing to have is it keeps the moisture inside that environment. And that's the main thing that plants need in order to germinate, is they need an adequate temperature. It can't be too hot or too cold. And they need adequate moisture in order for the seeds to germinate. So those kits are actually really nice, and I use them. And the other thing that's nice about them is they can be used for multiple seasons. So I have several that are a couple of years old. Eventually, the bottom tray will get holes in it and start leaking, so then you'll have to toss it and get a new one. But you don't have to use a kit. You can just save those six packs if you bought, you know, some veggies from the nursery or some color plants, you know, marigolds or something. You can save those six packs. You can wash them with a solution of 10 parts water to 1 part bleach, and that will kill any organisms in there that might cause your seedlings to die. But so you start with those clean containers. Then the other thing you want to start with is sterile soil. And there are mixes out there that are called seed starting mixes that you buy in a bag, just like any other potting mix. And I like those to use because they are very fine. They're much finer than the typical potting mix. But if I don't have any, I just use plain old potting mix, you know. But I do start with a new bag. I don't start with a bag that's been opened because you don't know what's been growing inside there since the last time you used it. And so always start with a clean bag. And, you know, sometimes I'll have a bag of brand new potting soil that I haven't opened. It's just been sitting there. And in that case, I'll just use that rather than going and buying seed starting mix.
Then we have to think about watering.
So then what you want to do with either your potting mix or your seed starting mix is often inside those bags, the mixture has gotten kind of dry. So I put it in a bucket, and just, you know, like a Home Depot orange bucket, and I just add a little water and I mix it with my hands until it's damp. Not soaking, but just damp. Then I take that soil and I put it into the six-pack, containers or the seed cell containers that I purchased with the kit. And I tap it down very gently, not hard. You don't want that soil to be like a rock. And then you put your seeds on top of it. And you do it based according to the seed packet directions. It will tell you this seed wants to be an eighth of an inch deep or this seed wants to be a quarter inch deep. So just read the packet and follow those directions so that the seeds are covered with the appropriate amount of soil. Then the way I like to water, because I like to use the trays, and instead of a tray that you buy in a kit, you can use cookie sheets, the ones that have the edges, not the flat cookie sheets, but the ones, I think they're actually called jelly roll pans, or you could even use like a cake pan, a rectangular cake pan. And I like to bottom water. So what I do is I put water in the tray, and I set the seed six packs in the tray and let them soak water up from the bottom. And the reason to do that is then you're not dislodging the seeds, because you've put these seeds, you know, on the top, and they're these little tiny guys usually. And if you use a strong jet of water from the top, then you could wash that seed right out. But if you do want to water from the top, there's a couple of ways to do it. You can get a watering can that has a fine, it's called a rose, believe it or not, the brass thing or the plastic thing on the end of a watering can is called a rose. So if you have one with lots of small holes, you can use that to water from the top because it will be gentle. Or some hose nozzles, if you take it outside, some hose nozzles actually even have a mist setting on it. And so I'll do that. I'll use the mist setting to water from the top. And then, you know, bring the tray inside if it already isn't inside. And if you have one of those plastic domes, you can cover it with the plastic dome. Or another thing that I've done is I've taken old dry cleaning plastic and I've made a little frame with coat hangers, and I just drape the plastic over the coat hangers, and that makes a mini greenhouse to keep the moisture in. And then you put it in a well-lighted window and let those seeds germinate.
Oh my goodness, there's so much to do in the month of August. We never thought about that, did we?
Yeah, we thought it was going to be an easy month, right? And it can be. We're not planting a lot. We're just trying to keep our plants that we want to save watered and keep our veggies harvested. And if we have time towards the end of the month, I'll go ahead and get some things started for the cool season.
Gosh. All right. Well, I think we are at the end of our time. Tina, thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, and we really appreciate it. And the last thing I need to tell everybody is that the opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about the show, go to kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 in Irvine. Also, if you have any questions about our show or just want to look at our website is www.ucanr. Well, there we go. I'm at the Master Food Preservers again.
You just love the Master Food Preservers
today. I am on the Master Food Preserver because we're going to be doing a show in a couple weeks on Master Food Preserving. Anyways, our Master Food Preserver website number is www.ucanr.org/MFPOC. That's MFPOC as in Master Food Preservers, Orange County. The helpline on the Master Food Preservers is UCCEMFP@ucdavis.edu. If you have questions regarding the Master Gardeners of Orange County, our website is www.ucceemg.com, and our hotline is hotline@ucceemg.com. This is Katrina Kirkaby with Tina Spindler, and we thank you for being with us today.